This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate. Hey, all cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. It's August 4th, my mother's birthday. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
Wow, happy birthday, Josh's mom. What a pleasure. And it's not just because your mom's celebrating her birthday. It's more that we're less than a week away from the game week one deadline. I finally have the nervous butterflies in my stomach related to my FPL team, Josh. Are you feeling that nervousness now?
I am feeling it a little bit, a lot bit, whatever the opposite of a little bit is how I'm feeling right now. I went to Maine for a week. I just got back last night, and last night, you know, I sort of in my head, I'd been planning on last night being the night when I was going to kind of do everything, like fully immerse myself in fantasy planning, like really get into it. And it was almost too much, you know? I mean, I sort of started with Stats Bomb. I was like, I don't even want to get into the fantasy part of it. I need to like get like a real grounding in like the players first. So I opened up like 12 tabs, you know, like All of these different tabs with all these different team previews. And I'm just digging through all of them and taking some notes. And I'm like, and I actually fell asleep. I was like, this is like too much. Like I think my brain was just like, no, this is too much. I did like a couple hours of like actual work, you know? And so,
right.
Yeah, so I'm feeling it a little bit too. It's good to be back. It's good to be recording the podcast. If we like want to peel back the curtain just a little bit for a second, it's been over 3 weeks since you and I have actually recorded a podcast together.
Yeah, right.
Just through the first time ever. We're going to the fifth year of doing the Always Cheating podcast. And this is the first time it's ever happened where you had a 2 week vacation that the day you got back was the day I left for a 1 week vacation. So We had to kind of front load all of these episodes, like many of which we recorded while I was like laid down with strep throat. So it was just a crazy stretch of time. So this is like the first real time podcast we've done in a while. It's very good to be back. We've got a lot to talk about.
Yes.
Brandon, I'm just going to get right into it.
Okay.
And if you never listened before, this is the Always Cheating Fantasy Podcast. I'm Josh. I'm talking to Brandon. We're two Americans. We're based in Brooklyn. We're fantasy addicts. We've been doing this podcast for 5 years. We're an award-winning podcast. We won the Football Blogging Awards Best Fantasy Football Content Creator Award this last spring. It was awarded at the Etihad. So that's who we are. And Brandon, I'm going to get right into the first question. What, if anything, can we learn from the Community Shield, which took place this morning?
Great question. That question was first posed by Red Dagger on our Slack channel, which we'll
touch on. I tried to pass that off as my own, didn't I?
Sorry. Yeah, you thought James' question was so good, you'd take it as your own. Now, I kind of ramped up to the Community Shield this morning. On Friday, I took in the Luton Town Middlesbrough match, the kickoff of the Championship League. Luton Town, one to watch. Incredible team performance there.
Wow.
Then yesterday morning, I watched Fulham get absolutely embarrassed by Barnsley. So it felt great to turn on the Community Shield and watch two fully fledged professional footballing teams, Liverpool and Manchester City,
Yeah. I'm actually tempted to ask you some Fulham questions, but I feel like that would be like a rabbit hole we have to avoid today. I want to know more.
Yeah, they're awful, and there's really nothing more to say about that. I think the first takeaway from the Community Shield is Mo Salah hasn't changed a single bit. He had trouble getting a lot of sting behind his shots and placing his shots, mm-hmm. but he was the liveliest player on the pitch, I thought, even livelier than the likes of Sterling. He looked ready for it. He looked well-rested. The commentary, Martin Tyler pointed out this fact that there was a ball drifting to the corner in the 90th minute, and Mo Salah did one of those sprints where his legs are just a complete blur. He looked like a cartoon character sprinting after it.
Yeah.
His fitness just looked off the charts, and you compare that to Kevin De Bruyne, who could not finish. He kind of laid down around the 90th minute with cramp.
He had some moments, but yeah, he looked, I mean, I thought he ran well when he was running, but yeah, I was actually a little annoyed that Salah played the full 90. I thought that was, I'm not really sure why he did that for an exhibition match when they play on Friday. But I agree with you. I thought he looked, he was really active. Lots of shots on goal with maybe a little bit better luck, a little bit more accuracy. Maybe he scores a goal or two in that match. I thought Sterling looked great. I actually think it's slightly hard to evaluate Sterling. He's been like an incredible offseason, but he's basically been playing as a forward, which he won't mm-hmm. be doing when the season starts, I wouldn't imagine.
Well, the injury to Sané early in the match, Sterling was playing through the middle until Sané got injured and Jesus comes onto the pitch, right. And that pushes Sterling out wide. So I do wonder, depending on, I mean, there's no way that Sané starts this weekend based on what his knee looked like when he came off the pitch. But I think right. there is a possibility that Sterling does play in the number nine role occasionally through the season.
I think occasionally he does. I mean, also you saw with some of his finishing later in the match that maybe, there's a reason that he's not the forward, for that team. Although he sort of kind of plays like one anyway.
Or lack of decision-making ability when there was that breakaway laid on with him and Kyle Walker. And Kyle Walker is like, hello, just all you have to do is pass the ball to me and we're good.
But the larger point is that he gets himself in those positions, and more times than not, something comes out of it from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, right.
A goal or an assist. Any other takeaways? Liverpool, yeah. I thought looked kind of, I asked you the question, then I started to answer it. So what were their takeaways?
Well, let's talk about some of the other players. I mean, the Liverpool defense, for one, Virgil van Dijk with the assist to Joel Matip. Van Dijk maybe tied with Andy Robertson, had the best games of all the defenders. Trent mm-hmm. looked kind of off the pace. He got skinned a few times by City. And what we saw so many times last season, Trent got the early sub. So I still kind of stand by what I had said in our Liverpool preview, in which Trent really has the best on Robbo in terms of crossing stats. And I think that he's likely to be the most improved this season. But I'm losing my nerve with Trent based on the preseason coverage and what we saw in the Community Shield. You start to gravitate to the safer options. And my eye was definitely toward Robertson. And Van Dijk, again, I think he's just the most solid FPL option going into game week one. That's why he's the most owned player. So
he's the... First player in your fan. If this is the first time you've ever played fantasy and you're just listening to this podcast to find out what to do, just make him the first player in your team, right? Like just make him the first player in your starting 11. Yeah. He's highly owned. So there's a kind of safety there, right? Or I should say a kind of coverage element, which is that, if he does anything well and you don't have him in your team, it's really going to hurt you. But he's also a great player. He's a locked in starter. He actually should have had a goal today too, right? I mean, barely missed that by centimeters, right?
Totally.
10 centimeters or something.
Yeah. And the last player I'll point to is KDB, which we talked about him coming up with cramp. But there's a lot of concern because there were so many unknowns around De Bruyne last season because he was so injured. And when he did play, occasionally he was playing deep. I thought in the Community Shield, you saw the best of what KDB could do for your FPL team. He was making runs into the box. He was arriving into the attack. He was playing farther forward, but he was still playing his box-to-box role. I'm excited at this prospect. The fact that it looks like he's not 100% match fit, not that he's injured or anything, but he's just not quite match fit. I'm a little concerned about reasonable starts and playing the full 90 week in, week out with him just at the start of the season.
Yeah, I think that could be a season-long worry, too. I mean, you know, Pep made comments, you know, near the end of last season that he's going to have to watch KDB's minutes a little more carefully. And ever since he made those comments, I've been a little wary of having him as a 9.5 million, you know, player in my team, you know, just because I do think that he may be one of those players who, you know, is a little more prone to Pep Guardiola rotation than some of the others, you know. So, yes, I think we're on the same page with basically all of it. I'm not as worried about Trent as you are, you know, just preseason working out the kinks. If you didn't convince yourself with your Trent argument, you did convince me. So I have him, I have him in my my bus team right now. Should we just maybe before we get into this podcast, we're going to, you know, take a look at game week one. Obviously, the big thing we're going to do in this podcast is talk about some unanswered questions. We're really going to try to break down the 6.5 million forward debate, which I think is a big question that basically everyone is trying to figure out.
Huge. It's massive.
So many players in there. You know, we're going to look at, you know, the actual fixtures, captains for game week one. But I thought we could also just talk about our current teams, where they are right now, what they look like. I will readily admit that the team that I reveal on this podcast will probably look different come Friday. Although we will be doing a Patreon podcast where we, you know, Thursday night after the transfer deadline, I'm going to do a Patreon podcast. You're welcome to be on that with me, Brandon. I'm going to do a kitchen table pod. We could do it together. We could do it separate. Let's talk about that offline.
Okay. I'm inclined for you to just reveal your team and I can keep my team a secret. That works better for me.
All right. So, here's my starting 11 right now. Subject to change, although, I mean, I'd say that, you know, a good seven of these players are locked in.
Yeah.
It's tinkering at the margins, really. Okay. All right. So in goal, I have Ederson. I have decided that this is the year I am not going to spend the entire season worrying about goalkeeper rotation and swaps. Yeah. And I'm just going to bring in an expensive 6 million goalkeeper and just start them. And now I am suddenly getting nervous about this because there is now this concern that Claudio Bravo has played so well that maybe he gets one additional start possibly before Ederson comes into the team.
This as a title of your memoir, The Year I Stopped Worrying About My Goalkeeper.
Yeah, but now I'm worried again. so we'll see. I mean, part of me would just love to have Allison and just like, just, you know, and just have him. But I just don't think you can do it. It's against
the rules, Josh.
Yeah, you'd miss out on bonus points. You'd miss out on goals. You'd miss out on assists. It's not quite worth it. Where I think it's actually a little easier to get by with only two Man City, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I there's no Man City defender that I'm just so in love with that I want to have them over Ederson, you know, because he's kind of the cheapest way into that defense. So that's what
Otamendi's frosted tips didn't really draw you into.
I don't want to deal with those center backs. I don't want to deal with Kyle Walker. I don't want to deal with whatever's going on and left back. I just like, just give me Ederson and get me out of there. All right. So I've got a 4-4-2. Okay. So in the defense, I've got Van Dijk and Trent. Okay. Those are my two defenders. I also have Lucas Dean, who, unbeknownst to me, is suddenly becoming less popular in the fantasy nerd sphere that I also occupy. There's suddenly a lot of concern that Idrissa Gueye, who is a decent but not spectacular player by any means, the loss of him is going to, render the whole back line unusable or something.
Never did the footballing community care so much about Idrissa Gueye until this moment. He never saw a yellow card challenge that he wasn't willing to make.
Exactly. And
he protected his defense by clattering into every midfielder.
it's the loss of him and Kurt Zuma, which I guess a lot of people are worried about. I'm not entirely sure why, because, I mean, Keenan and Yerry Mina might actually be a better combination anyway. I mean, Kurt Zuma was he was just okay last season. So anyway, so all that said, I don't share the concerns. I mean, I the attack is a bit of a worry. I don't know if you've been following any of Everton's offseason.
I don't know if they've scored a single goal in the preseason. Been, have they?
Yeah, like they scored one goal by like some random like academy player or something, and like that was pretty much it. You know, real problem up front. I mean, now they have. Is it Moise Keane? Is that how you say it? I'm actually not sure how to say their new forward's name. I wish
I'm not sure either. And it's going to be tricky because they have Keane in the defense and now they've got a second Keane up front. So
it'll be
Keane 1 and Keane 2. We'll have to give them Star Wars droid-esque names where it's K957.
Yeah, or it's pronounced completely differently and we're just doing what we normally do, which is just mispronounce everyone's names terribly. So I've got... anyway, so just to get back to my team here, now that I've tried to silence the haters on the Everton defensive front, I mean, Lucas Digne is amazing. And honestly, you could get Lucas Digne only for goals and assists. Like that alone would make him worth his price, in my opinion, even if you didn't get clean sheets. And then the fourth defender that I have right now, subject to change, is I have Charlie Taylor from Burnley. 4.5 million, very much locked down as one of the fullbacks in Burnley's team. They have poor fixtures in game weeks 2 and 4. And so I would actually only start him in game week 1. And then I would have him though for game weeks 5 through 9 when they have a really nice run of fixtures, 5 through 8, I guess. And so I'm not sure the problem there is that I really like him for game week 1. It's like you always want to get off on the best foot possible, and he's maybe the 4.5 million defender that I most want for game week 1. I don't really want to deal with any of that Watford nonsense. Like it just always seems like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I think I saw that Craig Cathcart is making a real run at game week 1, and I am truly, truly perplexed by this.
It's just too nerve wracking, right? They just rotate way too much back there. So it's Taylor for now as my fourth. I've also been tinkering with a 3-5-2, Brandon. So I'll got a lot of irons in the fire right now. Maybe I'll just go back to 4-3-3 still is appealing to me as well. So I got a lot of different things I'm considering, Brandon. All right. So in the midfield right now, I've got...
You sound like Jonty right now, in which you've got every base covered.
Yeah, exactly. I appreciate that. I'm trying to go for some real balance here, though, if possible. I actually don't think I have it as well as I want it right now, because I don't like my forward line. It feels a little too cheap. But in the midfield, I've got Sterling and Salah, kind of the two essentials, in my opinion. Yeah, again, if you were starting from scratch and you didn't, maybe you want to be different, maybe you want to be a little out there, I would still have Van Dijk, Sterling, and Salah as like the three players that I would just lock into your team, right?
I agree.
Yeah, I thought we'd be on the same page there. So after that, I've got Lucas Moura, who I think is flying a little bit under the radar as a midfield option. Pretty solid last season. It's a spectacular offseason. Owned by 8.7% of managers. Scored again today. Scored again about, I think, a week and a half ago or so. We have seen him. He's capable of, like, really destroying bad teams, too. Lo and behold, Spurs play two bad teams in two of their first three fixtures. They play Aston Villa at home and Newcastle at home in game week 3. So the only issue with Lucas is you probably do want to bench him for game week 2. And so any team that you set up is going to have to be, nimble enough that you can have him on your bench in game week 2.
I like the Lucas Moura pick. I really do. I think it's smart on your part. And I think it's just on the right side of the coverage pick argument where everyone is kind of trying to figure out a way to shoehorn Kane up front in their team. And Lucas Moura plays you know, sometimes farther up the pitch than Harry Kane does.
Yeah, Kane is more of a central midfielder at this point, who is good on set pieces and takes pens. I would say that, like, yeah, Son and Lucas seem more like the forward. They still have their legs. I think that's the biggest difference. That was like a little subtle dig on poor Harry Kane. But
I'm not going to go so far as to dig on Harry Kane, and you'll know why when we get to my bus team. But yeah. I love
Harry Kane. Super hardworking player, loves the game, you know, but it's had a bad run of injuries. And then I've got Bernardo Silva, who I'm not going to talk about too much because I don't think he's going to stay in my team.
I think that's the opposite of Lucas Moura, right? He's on the wrong side of the coverage argument.
Yeah, the thing about Bernardo Silva is I'd really like him if I had a draft team, you know, like if I had a team where I was just going to keep him for all 38 game weeks, you know, I think he'd really be appealing. It's hard for me to really to look you in the eye. Not that I'm doing that because we're recording this over the interwaves, but to look you in the eye and tell you that Bernardo Silva is a better option for the first five game weeks of the season than Ryan Fraser. I don't know how I could do that. Like that is, I would be a liar, Brandon, and you'd be in your rights to call me out on it. So
I don't like liars.
Yeah, but I do like him. I like him for value. I mean, I just think an 8 million player is pretty locked in as a starter for Manchester City. They score a boatload of goals. It's not a bad thing to have multiple attacking players from that team in your squad, especially if you can get them for a good price. So that is the appeal of Bernardo Silva. It's almost like it's a value pick more than like that I love him or really want to have him. So
yeah,
so it makes it kind of easier to get rid of him if I don't want him. So and then I've got Josh King and Wood up front right now, and Wood is kind of my other punty player. Has just had a great offseason. I don't know that I can really have Wood and Taylor. I don't know. I'm just really tinkering right now. And, you know, we're going to talk about these cheap forwards in a minute. And I'm hoping that it'll help me to sort out my own thoughts on forwards, because I sort of feel like they're all coin flips, you know, like it's like you could sort of, you know, like someone's going to look like a genius and someone's going to look like a fool, you know? Mm-hmm. But in the end,
well, that's why we have free
really
transfers,
close.
Josh.
Yeah,
I think going,
yeah, exactly.
Everything is so much a mystery. I mean, the real trick is to be able to make the right transfers going into game week 2, 3, 4, 5, but going into game week 1, we can't beat ourselves up over not being able to predict the future. You're going to hopefully, the hope is that you land one or two of these marginal picks. Not all of them are going to work out, but if they do, then maybe you have a chance of winning FPL this season.
Yeah, exactly. And the whole trick of the game is to just move a little faster, right? To get there one week ahead, you know, all the time. And then my bench is kind of your classic bench, which is Greenwood, Den Donker, Lundstrom. I feel like that's basically what like everybody has on their bench.
That's what I have.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I'm willing to rethink the Greenwood thing, you know. I would even be willing to maybe shift to a 4-3-3. And upgrade him to one of these 6.5 million players. I think he's probably slightly overrated as a player that we really want to have, but I don't know, 4.5 million striker who is probably going to start for Manchester United. It's kind of hard to say no, right?
And surely you have Daniel Button as your backup goal, or David Button.
No, I've got Stecklenburg. I don't like having those popular 4 million defenders.
That's true. That's a price fall that's just waiting to happen.
Totally.
All right, shall I go through my bus team here?
Yep, go for it.
Okay, so I also have Ederson. I'm going premium in the back. Totally agree with you in terms of he's the pick of all of the Man City defensive assets. Also, it's made even easier by the fact that Laporte is currently injured.
Right.
So I guess I haven't really fully engaged in the 4.5 goalkeeper rotation debate. Think Pope plus Heaton, the rotation of Burnley and Aston Villa. Some people are backing that, but I can never get that goalkeeper rotation right, and I do feel much more comfortable with a good set and forget.
I mean, the Aston Villa, like, there's no one knows what this Aston Villa defense is going to look like, right? It's like completely remade from scratch. And like, I mean, we saw with Fulham last year, like, when you just take a bunch of players, no matter how good they are, and just shove them all together, like, you don't necessarily know what that's going to look like. I mean, you know, one thing we talked about in our team preview is, didn't Aston Villa give up the joint most goals of any team in the top half of the table last season in the championship?
Yeah, they did until they brought in Tyrone Mings, who helped, and they have signed Mings to a permanent deal. But, mm-hmm. you know, if you're then basing your Premier League clean sheet odds solely on Tyrone Mings and your central defense,
right?
You know, you're kind of out there on a limb. So I'm with you. But we'll talk a little bit more about that with my defense, because I actually have Matty Target as my 4.5 defender right now, who would start in my 4-4-2. And I hear what you're saying. Like, what will they look like? Will it be bad? Will it be good? They don't have an excellent record, but Matt Target has a good personal record. Maybe it's like a Fulham homer pick. And when he started at Southampton, can make nice runs up the right-hand side. But after the Spurs match in game week one, if Villa do look good, then this is a pretty great run. It's mm-hmm. home Bournemouth and Everton, then Palace away and West Ham home. That's a really nice 4-game week stretch for me to basically test the waters with Villa and see how they look. And maybe that's just a transfer waiting to happen. But if I'm looking at all the other 4.5 defenders, I didn't see any others that really jumped out at me. And Burnley, probably Dyche. Well, we know that Dyche has a better defensive record than the unknowns of mm-hmm. Aston Villa. But I don't know. I'm just not feeling Burnley at the start of the season. So beyond Target, the other three in my back four, Van Dijk. And as I said, I'm kind of losing my nerve with Trent a little bit. And I've swapped Robertson in for the moment. And I've cheaped out on Everton. And I've gone with Seamus Coleman at 5.5. 0.5 cheaper than Lucas Dean. Honestly, I like Lucas Dean better than Coleman. But going back and looking at that Everton preseason goal scoring record we were talking about, Josh, one of those goals was scored by Seamus Coleman.
That's in true.
The preseason. Yeah, so there you true. Go. I kind of feel like maybe they're interchangeable. I do favor Lucas Dean just because he is that set piece specialist. But I'm willing to take that 0.5 to the bank just to spread it elsewhere. So looking at my midfield, it's Salah and Sterling. When I spoke to Dave Wegner-Lodahl on our Patreon exclusive podcast last week, I had three Liverpool in the back and I was getting very nervous about Salah. So I had to sacrifice someone and poor old Kevin De Bruyne had to make way. It was that cramp at the end of the Community Shield that sealed his fate.
Poor guy. Wow. One cramp. One little time cramp.
Oh, man. Yeah, and the fact that Salah just looks so good he looks so lively.
Yeah.
And we'll talk more about captaincy options between Sterling and Salah for game week.
It's not fun. I mean, you know, I don't like to have I like to have a team that has like a bunch of risks in it, you know, as much if not more than anybody. But like, you know, it's not fun to get off to a bad start, you know, and not having Salah on your team at all just feels needlessly risky, you know. I mean, given that you can just move off him so easily, you know, if it's not working. Right. So, yeah. So I totally understand why you did it. And I would have done the same thing.
My two other midfielders are John McGinn and Eozie Perez. I have put on record on this podcast my love of James Maddison and the Maddison hype train. I can't afford him. You see me, I'm cutting corners in my defense with Seamus Coleman. Mm-hmm. I also had to knock Maddison down to Perez. But looking at, I hesitate to put too much credence into the preseason results. A lot of these teams, they're not going for FPL returns. They're going for fitness. They're going for squad chemistry.
Right.
And all of that. But the fact that Maddison has been entirely absent from the goal output of Leicester in the preseason, but the cheaper Eozie Perez, who looks like he could be playing right off of Jamie Vardy, has, I think it's just really appealing.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about Eozie Perez?
Well, I like him. I mean, I think he might end up in my team. Is that a good preseason? I think that he is. I don't know. I mean, he's kind of an unknown to me. This idea, like, I'm not as excited about him. Well, there's a lot to like, you know? I mean, he's cheap for one thing. He is inexplicably classified as a midfielder going into this season. You know, I mean, a 6.5 million midfielder on a team that's expected to be pretty good, that might even, you know, challenge for a Champions League spot this year. You know, who's probably going to play now out of position as a forward, kind of in the Okazaki role behind Vardy. You know, there's a lot to like there. Double digit goals last season, scored 12 goals. I've never been particularly impressed by him as a player, you know, like I don't rate him super highly, you know, but I love the fit, you know? And so, you know, I like him. I mean, like, it's sort of, he's a player I wouldn't mind waiting on, you know, I wouldn't mind waiting a couple of weeks and sort of seeing how he fits into that team. I still wonder if Madison might be a slightly better option, like just, you know, have more assists, maybe a little more likely to pick up bonus points. He has 0.5 million more. I certainly don't want to be doubled up on Leicester midfielders. At least I don't think I do. But, you know, so I guess like I sort of like him, but I'm still kind of keeping him at arm's length for the time being.
Yeah. I think I started to spread a little bit more money around to solve my fourth midfielder problem that was 5.0. Mm-hmm. We've talked too much about Jorginho at this point. So Madison down to Perez allows me to move Jorginho up to John McGinn. And John McGinn is probably the most exciting attacking player from any other promoted sides, just based on what we've seen preseason. Mm-hmm. And I really like him. And I understand that it's really hard to predict how Villa is going to look right after coming up from the championship. But if anyone's going to do the business for them, I think it is John McGinn. So 5.5, maybe another bargain.
I don't mind it as a little punt, as a kind of risk. I mean, you know, that's like, seems like that's like that, you know, if he's like the 11th best player and you're starting at 11, that seems like a decent place to take a punt. I mean, I'd rather do that than have some 5 million player from a team where I kind of know exactly what I'm getting, you know, like a Mark Noble type or something where you're like, okay, I'm going to get, you know, 4 goals and 4 assists from him, you know, over the course of 38 game weeks.
They will be on the pitch.
Right.
Okay, so my two strikers up front, it's Harry Kane, and I basically, all these compromises that I'm talking about are in an effort to get Harry Kane against, at home, against Villa in game week one, and then again home in game week three against Newcastle.
Right.
So I think those are two captainable fixtures for Harry Kane. Of course, we have a lot of competition for captaincies in my squad. I don't really understand. I haven't fully come to this idea in FPL of having too many premium assets in your side to create these captaincy dilemmas. So if I have Kane, Sterling, and Salah any given week, it generating some sort of captain dilemma, and what's the point of having all these expensive guys?
Well, let's table that question, because that's actually a question that was asked of us. So let's talk about that in a minute. Well, so you got Kane, and then who's your other forward? I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's another one that we can table because we are going to get into the 6 million, 6.5 striker discussion, but it's Che Adams at Southampton.
Wow.
And I just think, like, kind of like John McGinn, he's one of these guys that, you know, his reputation coming up from the championship precedes him, and it seems fun. He just seems like a fun player to have.
Well, I like it, Brandon. I feel like this is a team that was not built on Twitter, and I like that about it. It's very unique. It's very different than mine, actually, too, which is kind of fun. And usually you and I end up in a very similar place with our team. So I like that. I mean, we both have the basics, of course, you know, because you've got to have certain people. All right. So that's where we are. I bet both of us end up making quite a few changes, as everyone listening to this podcast probably will, you know, over the next couple of days as everything gets. I'm probably going to talk myself into Moise Keane, Brandon, you know, when he comes in at a 5 million, you know. No, I'm sure he's going to come in at like 7.5 or something.
The big worry is he comes in at 7 or 7.5 and it's impossible to get him into our side.
Yeah.
That's why FPL is brilliant. It's another decision you have to make.
So many this year. All right, Brandon, let's take a break. Just briefly, I wanted to note, Patreon, if you would like to support the podcast, you can visit patreon.com/alwayscheating. You get access to one extra podcast each week during the regular season. That is our Kitchen Table podcast for Brandon and I. record on one of our respective kitchen tables, and we talk about our team going. Usually it's recorded about a day before the game weeks kick off. We also have access to a very active Slack chat right now. I kind of took a few days off when I was on vacation, and I was like, whoa, there's like a lot going on here right now. Active Slack chat, and also access to private leagues and t-shirts and all kinds of cool stuff. So go to patreon.com/alwayscheating to find out more. We have so many thank yous. We actually have over 60 new patrons since we last recorded. So we are going to, which we've never done before, and I'm sincere apologies to all the new patrons. We're going to table the thank yous until near the end of the podcast, because it's the first game week of the season. We've got a lot to get to, and it's just going to take a little too long to run through those. So all the thank yous are going to come near the end of the podcast.
I'm going to put some extra pizzazz on these name reads, though, so it will be worth the wait, I promise you.
Excellent, excellent. All right, take a quick break, and let's get back with unanswered questions. Brandon, we're back. It's part one. We've got unanswered questions going into game week one. First question comes from FPL Chancer. He says, it's that time of year when managers start losing their nerves over the big of the back and go back to the glitzy attackers that make them feel better. You know, or that score lots of goals and win you your leagues. Are you and Brandon similar, or are you holding firm on a premium defense?
Well, as discussed with my bus team, less than a week ago, I had Robertson, Trent, VVD, and Lucas Dean, and Ederson in my back line.
Right.
And I wanted to find a way to get Harry Kane up front. I don't know why I'm so fixated on Harry Kane, and maybe I'm just looking at this as some kind of differential. But yeah, I've clearly lost my nerve. And what helped me think about this, Dan, is the Patreon podcast that we posted with Dave last week. We talked about betting odds heading into the start of the Premier League season. And some of the odds that we looked at were teams with great odds to have the most clean sheets and teams with great odds to have scored the most goals. First in clean sheets and first in goals would be Manchester City. Second in clean sheets and goals would be Liverpool. So it kind of just got me thinking, I can't lose sight of the goals that Liverpool are going to score strictly in favor of these clean sheets. And secondly, I can't lose sight of the clean sheets that Manchester City are going to bring in. Probably one might guess more than they had last season. So I've come around to the idea that you simply have to, it's going to benefit your FPL team to have a piece of both the defense and the attack, particularly on both these, the best teams in the league in City and Liverpool. And that's sort of the more, I guess, nuanced argument of why I've done this. Is just beyond losing my nerve. I just feel like it's probably the smarter way to play, frankly.
Sure. I mean, you say lose your nerve, and it sounds like it's like your manhood's under attack or something. I mean, it's just like, you know, like, do you get a little more sensible about certain things and, you know, a little tolerance for risk? I mean, you know, I think that if anything, not going to big at the back is a sign of courage going into this season. It seems like basically everyone is going to have at least, you know, four premium defenders. I mean, I guess I've got, I think that if you have three expensive defenders and an expensive keeper, you basically do have a four at the back, right? I mean, that's like, it's kind of the same thing. You know, and so, I mean, yeah, I've never spent this much money on my defense before. You know, I don't love it. You know, I mean, I talked about this, not to keep referencing these Patreon podcasts, but I talked about it with FPL Stag. I mean, I have, you know, I have three top 2,500 finishes in the last like seven years or whatever it is. And, you know, each year that was like with a meat and potatoes 3-4-3, you know, like a very conventional, you know, last year I was 3-4-3 the entire season, had my best ever finish, you know? And so this idea that suddenly the game is so different, so fundamentally different than it was, you know, last season or any of the previous seasons that I played fantasy, is a little hard for me to stomach. And I don't know that I totally agree with it. Although I do think that the way the game week is shaped, like the way the season's shaping up the first maybe 10 game weeks, it does make sense to go big at the back. I don't know if that's going to last. I suspect it won't. I mean, this is a league that's more attacking than ever, you know? And so you have to sacrifice somewhere. You know, you go big at the back and you sacrifice the attack a little bit, you know? And so, I mean, you know, the idea of being loaded up on, you know, if I look at my team, you know, a few weeks in the season and suddenly I've got a bunch of Leicester and a bunch of Bournemouth and a bunch, you know, it's like, if I'm just like bloated up on mid-table attackers, I just don't know that that long-term is like going to be the best strategy for points. But, you know, so I'm sort of I'm trying to find a little bit of balance, I guess, if I can wrap this up a little bit, my mini rant here.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think balance is a key term there. And just a brief counterpoint that has the game really changed that much from the heyday of the 3-4-3? And yeah, I tend to agree with you that it hasn't changed that much, but I think fullbacks are more important in the league than ever. And the attacking output that we see from them is important. And that's that is reflected in our bus teams currently that are set up as 4-4-2.
Right.
Previous seasons, we would make a huge argument that if you're bringing in a 4.5 striker, that's just going to be an albatross for your team until you play a wild card. You're right. Never going to be able to get rid of Mason Greenwood, until you play a wild card. And odds are he will at some point be phased out of the starting lineup if he ever gets there. And that could be a problem. So I think that just does point to us admitting to a degree that the game is changing marginally.
Yeah, but also, like, we, you know, eventually, you know, like, maybe it'll be these crazy attacking center backs on Sheffield United or something, or, you know, maybe Southampton, you know, like, really puts it together this season defensively. And so, you know, it's like, I think that you can find cheap attacking players, you know, on these promoted teams or on some of the bottom half of the table team. You know, like a couple seasons ago in Bournemouth, you know, got a Europa League spot. You know, they were packed with cheap players that allowed you to load them up on your defense and then spend that money up front, you know? And so right now we don't know who those players are. And so it's kind of hard not to spend $7 million on Trent Alexander-Arnold. But like, you know, yeah, if I can replace him with a 4.5 million player at some point and upgrade, you know, Ryan Fraser to Sadio Mane, like, yeah, I'm going to be doing that at some point. You know, so that's kind of where I am, which is, I guess I'm just, maybe it's just, some people are maybe a little more tactically nimble or something, and they think it's a, you know, it's like, for me, I'm like, it's like a car with a bad wheel or something. Like, I'm always going to be veering towards being more attacking. You know, it's like, I can try to overcorrect. I can put two hands in the steering wheel, but I'm just inevitably, it's like the tide or something. It's always going to pull me towards being more attacking. It's just the style that I like, you know? And I also just think it's more fun. Mm-hmm. I don't like watching matches where I'm just like holding my breath over clean sheets lost, you know?
Sure. I've yet to meet a driver who thinks that their steering wheel that's out of alignment is a fun car to drive, but I'm here for that. I think that's pretty cool. Speaking of going big at the back, if you are truly going big at the back, what you're going to need up front are these budget attackers. So we have a question from Josh on our Slack. Mm-hmm. Who comes out on top between King, Jota, De La Feu after the first six game weeks? So should we paint a big picture in terms of the options here at 6.5 and 6.0?
Yeah, I expanded this question, which was asked, a few people asked on Twitter as well. I expanded to seven players because I think there's, and honestly, you could have expanded this even further. You could have added, is it Wesley? Is that how you say that name?
On Villa.
Yeah. So I didn't even add Wesley. The Dread Pirate Roberts. He was not added.
As you wish.
So, all right, let's just run through the seven that I have here, which is we have Josh King, we have a Jota, we have De La Feu, we have Wood, Adams, Shea Adams, your new boy,
my hero.
Yeah, we have Billy Sharp on Southampton, and we have Seb Aller, is that how you say his name?
Aller.
Thank you, Seb Aller. I should just take the H off there, easier to say. Yeah, all right, exactly. So let's run through the good and the bad with these seven players, okay? I've listed some pros and cons for all of them, okay?
Okay.
And let's just run through all of them, and then we'll I'll sort of list off a couple things, then you can make some comments, and then maybe we'll come to some kind of conclusion, okay?
I'll make some good comments, probably, all right. And some bad.
All right, Josh King, they have great fixtures. He has a pretty solid track record. Probably, I feel like people are dismissing his track record a little bit. I mean, this is a guy who has scored, you know, 16 goals in a season. You know, so he's on pens as well. You know, the problem is he the third best option on this Bournemouth team? You know, and is it – he's playing next to a striker who's pretty clearly a better player than he is, I think, in Callum Wilson. And they have a – you know, know, player who led the league in assists last season in Ryan Fraser. So, you know, is that, you know, if you don't want to double up on Bournemouth, which I kind of don't, is he the player that you want to have as your sort of one Bournemouth option?
My concern with Bournemouth is, did they overperform last season? Okay, so this is magical thinking, but I fear with Bournemouth, they are the type of team that could regress mm-hmm. and not put up the same kind of attacking output that they did last season. I mean, I don't think David Brooks was the whole linchpin there, and now he's going to be out for 3 months.
But, yeah, yeah.
That said, I think King feels to me like the second favorite option to me. Okay, this is tricky, right? I think King is the second favorite option. Whether it's Fraser or Wilson that's number one, I kind of don't know. Mm-hmm. But regardless of who you think is the best pick, King still feels like the second best option. But the fact that he does have penalties, he said in some interview last week, I think his target was something like 20 goals, and he's feeling good about reaching there because he's in good form. Plus, yeah. He has penalties. So he's out there touting the fact that he's on pens for Bournemouth.
Yeah, and going for goals. And those fixtures really, just to re-highlight them, I mean, it's you know, so they have one bad fixture, Man City, in Game Week 3. Other than that, it's two promoted teams back-to-back to start the season. They have Leicester away, which is okay, but you'd expect them to score in that match. Then Everton, Southampton, West Ham in Game Weeks 5 through 7. So it's a really solid run. Even Game Weeks 8 and 9, it's Arsenal and Norwich. I think those fixtures are fine. I mean, so you can get through 25% of the season with really only one truly bad fixture in Man City in Game Week 3. And even that one's at home, so it's not like you need to bench your Bournemouth assets. So, I mean, maybe I'm just like a little, it feels weird to me to have two Bournemouth players to start off the season. It just feels like overkill, you know, especially because their prices have all gone up a little bit. So if I have King and Fraser, I have, you know, 14 million of my 100 million is spent on Bournemouth assets, you know, for a team that scored, what, like 44 points total last season. It just seems like a lot. Yeah. But this is fantasy, and it's not the table. It doesn't, you know, this, I mean, you know, whether they lose a game 5-4 or win it 5-4 or whatever, it doesn't really matter as long as they're all scoring points. So, you know, so I think he's in my team right now, but I'm willing to reconsider still. All right. So let's move on to Jota. I wrote bad fixtures, great player. I just really like Diogo Jota. I think he's a fantastic, you know, you know, he had a little bit of a slow start last season, but when he came on, he was fantastic. You know, I worry a little bit about them because of the Europa League, and I don't think their fixtures are great. I suppose you could add there's a little bit of worry now about whether he is like a locked in starter. I mean, do you see any worry there? You know, with
I don't.
Yeah,
I don't. That young. With Cutrone coming in, no, I think that squad depth for the Europa League, I mean, maybe if Cutrone shows that he has a flair for the Premier League, then maybe there's some rotation, but there is nothing that needs changing about that Wolves starting 11 from last season. They looked fantastic, but I share your concerns. The Europa League and the bad fixture start kind of takes Wolves off the table for the start of the season. That's really disappointing because of all the strikers on this list, Jota is probably my favorite and the one that I think would have the best odds of outperforming them all. But you just can't own him at the start of the, I feel personally that you just can't own him at the start of the season. So love Jota, but he's off the table for me.
I think so too. I mean, it's just Leicester away, not a good fixture. Man United at home, okay. But I mean, it's not like you'd expect them to score four in that match. You know, Burnley at home could be a tricky fixture. Everton away, Chelsea at home. It's play Man City in game week 8. Plus they have these Europa League demands. It just does not feel like sensible, you know, like, yeah, you could maybe start them off. You could probably play him for the first three fixtures and get away with it, but it doesn't feel like the smartest. I agree with everything you said, basically, which is that he could overperform his fixtures for sure. And he's a really good offseason as well. If you just want to have a talented player, you know, who maybe he's probably of these players in this list, I would say he's the one who is least fixture dependent. You know, so right. I guess that would be an argument in his favor. Although, do we maybe see a little bit of rotation once the Europa League starts? I think it's possible.
It's possible. Yeah, it is possible. All right. What about De La Feu on Watford? He's also priced at 6.5. You've noted that De La Feu has good fixtures, but he is always an injury worry. And we saw some rotation with Jerry D last season. So where do you stand? You're a huge fan. He did wonderful things for your FPL team last season.
I do like De La Feu. I mean, he scored 10 goals, 5 assists last season. That was after not playing the first 8 or 9 matches of the season. But a muscle injury is one of those things that really, he was actually in my squad until he got injured. And now I'm too scared to bring him in. You know, they hope that he'll be ready for game week one. And I just, no one wants to go into game week one with a player that you hope, cracks the squad.
The cranberry said it best when they said that muscle injuries do linger. It is a worry.
Yeah. And he's already a player who's prone to get subbed fairly early on in the match. And so if he's got a muscle injury, there's no way he's playing 90 minutes, in any of these early matches. And so, I liked his run of fixtures a lot. Brighton, West Ham, Newcastle, and through their first four. But I think because of the injury worries, I'm just not going to take the risk. And so are you with me there?
I'm totally with you. Yeah, let's move on to Chris Wood. Woody. The great large Kiwi. Yeah,
that's right.
6.5. We know about your great love of Burnley and their opening set of fixtures. And Chris Wood has been a madman in the preseason.
Yeah,
scoring for fun with Burnley. So he's in your side. Sell me on Chris Wood.
Well, OK, so I think that one thing, if I don't play a wild card early, or maybe, if it takes me a few weeks before I ultimately play it, I think what I would like to do is spend my transfers. It's always a dangerous game to play. You can't plan a transfer, but assuming no massive injury worries, I would love to just sort of flip my forward position among different players, my sort of second or third forward, whatever my team shakes out. And so I just really like Chris Wood for game week one. And actually even game week two, I wouldn't mind. I mean, Arsenal's back line is it's a mess right now. And so if I had Wood for that one as well, I'd be okay with it. But, I wouldn't mind also just moving him on to someone else in game week two, and just sort of shifting all of these, forwards around a little bit. And so that's my argument, is that I like him for one fixture. and then I don't mind him for the game week two. And then I wouldn't mind having him for that run between game week 5 and 8.
I do think Ashley Barnes's exploits over the last couple of seasons have really outshone Chris Wood. And I think that he's gotten the short shrift. I think Chris Wood is a great striker for what he is on the team that he is. And he should be fit for a lot of FPL sides. So, yeah, I like the pick. I'm just not sure when to deploy him.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, it's the people's expectations can be a little too high, I think, for some of these cheapish players in your team, right? And we're still ultimately talking about a 6 million or 6.5 million player. And, it's like, yeah, you can take a risk on a Wesley or whatever. But I mean, Chris Wood has back-to-back seasons of scoring double-digit goals in the Premier League. And so there's a kind of safety in that. Like, at least we know that he is like a confirmed double-digit scorer in the Premier League, which is, one of these relatively big forward signings is not going to come off, right? But there's no way in my mind that Chris Wood has fewer than 10 goals this season. So,
can you tell me what you expect from a 6.5 million striker? Do you want a goal or an assist every other game? Would a goal or an assist every 3 games do it for you, be enough to keep somebody like Chris Wood in your team? I mean, that's outside of the idea that you're constantly trying to make intelligent transfer moves week to week. And maybe
2 goals a game is really what I'm looking for. So how many games are in the season? 30? So 76 goals is what I guess.
It's the baseline.
An attack and return every other match, I guess, would be what I'd be looking for. I'd at least be looking for a Giroux, as we call it, a 5-point return made famous by Olivier Giroux, who just constantly, whether it was one goal in a bench coming off the bench or one assist, a headed pass or something, Giroux was just the master of the 5-point return. So if you want to kind of average out something like a Giroux over the course of, you know, a few game weeks. So that can be, I mean, a Giroux is an 8-pointer and a 2-pointer averages out to a Giroux, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, 8-pointer, a 2-pointer, and a 5-pointer. And if those are the returns I got from Wood in the first three fixtures, I'd be pretty happy with that. You know, I think that was okay.
Yeah, I'd live with that.
Agreed?
Too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I do. All right, so who's next?
We got your boy, Che Adams.
Yeah, okay, so we're finally dipping into the cheaper price bracket, and what makes Adams so much more appealing is he's $6 million, so you're saving 0.5 over the rest of these other guys. I think in the championship, he was second only to – wait, no, he was somewhere in the realm of Tammy Abraham and Pukki in terms of his goal output, well over 20 goals, to say the least. And you have a note here that Southampton's fixtures are not that great. And I'm looking at their fixtures. They are away Burnley to start, then home Liverpool, away Brighton, home Manchester United. Then in game weeks 5 and 6, it's Sheffield United and Bournemouth. I'd say that these are less bad and more mixed. And that's just based solely on the outcome that what if Southampton started the season and they were good? Mm-hmm. That's not a guarantee, but if Southampton start well, I think the only really bad unplayable fixture I see here is game week 2, home Liverpool. That said, it's at home, so I think the away fixtures are really desirable, and the poor fixtures are at least at home for Southampton. So Che Adams is somebody I can live with as a punt.
Okay, that's fair. And 5 and 6 are good. Although then again, you know, 7 and 8 are very. It's funny there. If you want to look at one team that really got screwed, it kind of depends on how you look at it. I guess maybe it's more of a fantasy perspective here. But looking at all 38 weeks of their season, I'm like, ugh, when am I going to have some Southampton players? I kind of like their defenders. Like I'm sort of interested in them as a team that could improve a lot this year as well. And I'm like, maybe in game week 14. So like come Thanksgiving time, Brandon, I may have a little run with some Southampton defenders and then table them. And then come Valentine's Day, I might pick up another defender, and then that'll be it for the rest of the season. So it's kind of a weird run for them where they don't have any of those, like, you know, like Everton have like what seems like 14 good fixtures to kick things off, you know? And it just, I don't know. Like, it seems like Southampton never really have that like really nice, easy run this year.
All right. We've got two more strikers to talk about. First of which is Billy Sharp, who was in my tinker last week. And Dave absolutely savaged me on our Patreon pod for having Billy Sharp.
Right.
Going back to the idea of the bookies odds, are that Sheffield United are going down and they're going to be the lowest team in terms of scoring goals. So yeah, Billy Sharp might have a great goal scoring record, but he is going to be on a team that is going to be the whipping post for the rest of the Premier League.
I am super interested in this team. Like I'm really interested in this fighting center backs thing that they got going on. I think that they're it's creative. It's different. They're a team that I think a lot of people could really like. Like I think that they could be kind of a neutral's favorite this year, just because they are sort of they're like clay that could be, you know, it's like we don't really know what we're going to get with this team at all. Uh-huh. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, I think with the other two promoted sides, you have a better sense of what you're getting. Maybe Norwich is a little bit more of a question mark, but certainly with Aston Villa, they're kind of Aston Villa are sort of building a more conventional West Ham style team, I would say. You know, so I think, I don't know. So I think that they're, I think I agree with you though. It's just that Billy Sharp, I was a sentimental pick. He was a player that I was really excited about as well. But in the end, they're probably gonna be the worst team in the league, and he's a 34-year-old striker. So we should probably look somewhere else. Sadly,
we probably move on to, Aller. Yeah. Aller at West Ham. Came in pretty expensively priced at 7.5 mil, but this guy is like the king of all YouTube scissor reels right now.
Yeah, it's really too bad that he's so expensive. If he was even 7 million, I think I would really, especially with West Ham, they have some pretty good fixtures. You know, I mentioned that I was on a little stats bomb kick last night. You know, they just had some great things to say about Aller. This comes from stats bomb, Brandon. Within the top five leagues in 2018-19, he had the eighth highest scoring contribution, so goals plus assist. Wow. Per 90 minutes overall, and the third highest XG per shot of any forward. That's right. Third highest XG per shot of any forward in the top five leagues. Those are outstanding stats. Really, really intriguing. Unfortunately, we just don't. You can be a good player, but if the fit isn't quite right, you can't just plug anybody. Maybe Zlatan. Outside of Zlatan, you can't just plug anybody in and assume that they're going to score 15 plus goals.
I hope Zlatan is listening to this episode right now. He's going to love you for that.
Yeah, he's going to move to West Ham just to prove me wrong. definitely intrigued, but I think I have to wait. It's a little too. I might just wait 1 week. I mean, if he knocks in a goal on Man City, like, boom, I'm going to try to get him in for game week two. I don't know about you, but don't you kind of like the idea of keeping like 0.5 million on your bench just so you have a little bit of wiggle room going into game week two?
Mm-hmm. There are so many ideas that I love that are basically impossible for right. me at this moment. But having a little money, a little rainy day fund in your FPL bank is a great idea if you can achieve it. Because, I think you may need this. This West Ham team is apparently just going to be all action and no defense. And from an FPL point of view, that could be a lot of fun. And hopefully we have a number of options. I mean, Lanzini is scoring quite a few goals this season. He's always been a fun player win fit to tinker around with your FPL.
Yeah,
that
Danny Ings category where it just can't stay healthy. Who was the Spurs forward who's Eric Lamela's, midfielder, I should say. All right. So that was 45 minutes on that question, but I think it was useful to go through. Next question.
Well, Josh has been trying to get at a question on our podcast for a while. So I think it's fair that his first pod appearance was a doozy.
That's true. And that's J-A-W-S-H. That was not me trying to get my own question onto Josh. So, having talked all this through, Brandon, has anything changed for you? I mean, have you gotten more excited, less excited?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of talking myself. I'm warming up to the idea of Chris Wood, but and Aller if I were to have the money. But I think I'm still happy with this Che Adams pick for the time being.
Yeah, it'd be cool to have Chris Wood for one game week and leave a million in your bench so you could move to Aller for game week two. That would be some real high level thinking that would probably blow up when Mo Salah gets injured in game week one or something. But cool idea.
I assume the reason that new always cheating patron saint Timu Puki, he didn't end up on this list just because the Norwich has like the worst fixture run of all time.
I feel like we're just going to, we just have to table all Norwich discussion for a couple of game weeks and then we'll pick it up during like wildcard time. All right. Next question. There's a lot to think about there. But I think that, I thought it was useful to go through those. Kloppenaut says, how much do you take into account balance and flexibility going into a new season? And Brad, I'm actually going to pair this with another question. It comes from Jeff Petter. He says, how about just going big and having all three of Salah, Sterling, and Kane? He says, I know what the conventional answer is. I know what the safe answer is. But if the answer to the question is, what if Kane goes off, then your most expensive striker is 8 million. And your response is, well, that's what I have free transfers and a wild card for. Then surely the same applies if you go all in with all three big guns and it doesn't work out. So, Brandon, you've gone with the big gun approach and you're sort of agreeing with him there.
Well, I am agreeing with Jeff here. The idea that, well, that's what you have a wild card for. So let me put it this way. You have a wild card, which a lot of us will play early because there are going to be a lot of unknown quantities that make themselves visible to us after game weeks two through three or one through three.
Right.
That's why we need our wild card. We don't need a wild card or a guesstimator to tell us that Harry Kane could actually go off. So if you start with a balanced approach and maybe you have more money invested up front, say in a premium like Kane or Aubameyang or even somebody as expensive as Jamie Vardy, that at least leaves you with some amount of flexibility to move into game week two or to game week three, because just to play a wild card so you can get in one premium player that is at that moment going off, it's not the kind of holistic approach I like to take when triggering my wild card. I want to trigger the wild card because there are these three to four marginal players that we were just talking about, whether it's Chris Wood or Che Adams or Ayoze Perez that you didn't have in game week one. Now you need to get them in. And now I'm looking at the next game week and I need to make 3, 4, 5 moves just to keep pace with the herd. That's when the wild card is needed. So I think balance allows you to, it gives you that much more flexibility. But I think the point I'm trying to make with Kane is I have a better idea of what Kane is capable of. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a less risky move going into game week one than going into game week one with De La Feu and Diego Jota. So it's flexibility, but it's also premium assets. You get what you pay for. I feel like I am more able to predict my outcome in game week one because of that. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I understand. And I have my approach has changed a little bit over the years, I guess, where I do value balance more than I used to. And I don't like the balance if I have those three players on my team. And I think that sometimes, and I'm not saying that you're guilty of this yourself, but I think with some people, the thinking is a little warped where it's like, either you have Kane or you have King, you know, or whatever. And it's like, but that 4.5 million doesn't just improve one other spot. It can improve like 4 or 5 other spots, you know? And it's like, it can upgrade you in so many different ways across your team. And, you know, all of those players suddenly become players who are much more likely to get attacking returns or clean sheets or whatever. And, you know, it upgrades a Coleman to a Dean, you know, or whatever. And so I think that for me, I just can't quite find the balance if I have all three of those players, because I think that my whole team sort of gets dragged down as a result, you know? And so, So I do agree that it's better for game week one, but just over the long term, I just don't. I specifically have concerns about Kane, you know, and whether he's really, you know, going to suddenly become the 20 plus goal scorer again that he used to be, you know? I don't have deep concerns. I mean, I think he's still fantastic, but I don't totally trust him right now. And, you know, he scored like one goal in the preseason. And that was a fluke goal from midfield, you know, as time expired in a friendly. So, you know, so I don't know.
He technically scored a penalty in a penalty shootout. So if we're counting those,
he's got a brace in the preseason. So, I mean, yeah. So I think that, you know, that sort of answers the question about balance and flexibility, which is that I value that more than I used to. I don't know, but I also like, I mean, I think that it's just like a time and a place, you know, I mean, it sort of depends on where you are in the season, you know, like there are times during the season when suddenly, you know, Aubameyang and Kane will have like an extended run of just beautiful fixtures, you know, and suddenly you can sort of rejigger your entire team and you're like, well, I've got 2 11 million forwards right now because, you know, this run is so good that I have no choice but to kind of go with a slightly unbalanced team, you know. And so it just sort of depends on you know, where you are in the season as well. So I mean, you know, I think you could definitely argue that with VAR getting introduced, with home fixtures against two teams that should be two of the worst teams in the league this year, and Aston Villa and Newcastle, that Kane and a great captain, especially if you captained Kane, I think that he's even, you know, it's even more valuable to have him. So I do understand it, even though I'm not going to go with that approach. I understand your reasoning.
Sure. All right. We have another question here from FPL Ant. If you were to indulge in one unproven asset, this is kind of a fun question, i.e. a new to the regular first team action in the Premier League, who would it be? The first one that comes to mind is Christian Pulisic on Chelsea. Where he's unproven in the league, though he's looked decent for Chelsea when he's played in the preseason and looks like he's integrating well into whatever's going on there in the Chelsea first team. So he'd be my one pick.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think it's Allaire, actually. I think he's got some of that Pascal Gross type appeal, you know, where he kind of can score an assist and, you know, I don't know. I'm sort of talking myself into him, Brandon. I don't know. I might just do it. It's just that Man City fixture is so annoying, isn't it? It kind of really, that's in game week one, it really kind of takes some of the shine off him, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, Manchester City is not bulletproof.
No.
If you're looking at these mid-range to lower mid-range players, all it takes is one little cheeky moment to get your money's worth from them, even against a team like Manchester City. So if it's just what that one fixture that's throwing you off, maybe it's just worth going for it.
Yeah, it may be. It may be. All right. So I do think that's a good question. There's a lot of other, like, I mean, I think Timu Pukki is a player that I'm sort of excited to have at some point. I mean, I've, you know, based solely on how well he did last season in the championship, I'm kind of excited about, you know, what he can do. So yeah, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast and you're, you know, I'd love to hear other people's thoughts too. So, you know, talk to us on Twitter or the Slack or whatever, and let us know, who you're sort of inexplicably or maybe explicably excited about going into the season.
All right, we have two more questions here in this unanswered questions section. Next one comes from Vinyl Richie. Could we please have your thoughts on Everton at the moment? I've gone from Siggy and Dean as nailed on in my team to not having any of them. They really are an FPL boogie team, but still have great fixtures. So you mentioned this at the start of the podcast, with somehow everyone has dropped off of Lucas Dean and the Everton defense with the news of Idrissa Gueye. And Siggy was one of these nailed on midfielders when we all started tinkering at the launch of the FPL site. And they've been very quiet preseason and people are starting to get worried.
You know, I've already kind of given my spiel. I guess I am worried about the attackers a little bit. I mean, the thing is, Richarlison actually had a really good offseason. It just, he did it with Brazil and not with with Everton, you know. So do you take that into account at all, Brandon? I mean, that he did quite well for Everton, for Brazil, you know, in the Copa America.
I do take it into account in that it is him maturing and growing as a player. And I think that's got to give him a certain level of confidence playing with Brazil and scoring in a major tournament. In addition to Richarlison having this penchant for getting off really quickly at the start of the season. So if there's any time to take a flyer on Richarlison, it's probably early on in the season, particularly with these great fixtures.
Yep.
And yeah, the same point I had made earlier in the, what do we make of the preseason? It's not, these teams aren't going out there trying to post points to a table.
Yeah.
They're trying to accomplish other things than FPL points. So, I mean, they have been keeping clean sheets. We should mention that even if they haven't been scoring goals, they've been keeping clean sheets.
True.
So your faith in the Everton defense should still be solid enough.
It's the same business. I agree. It's the same back five, basically. So yeah, I feel pretty good. I mean, I guess Mina in and out of that team a little bit, but Yeremina is a highly rated player, you know, especially going into last season he was. So yeah, and Gylfi Sigurdsson, you know, veteran player. I mean, I don't really care how he did in the offseason, right? I mean, I don't think that has a lot of bearing on how he performs during the season itself.
Yeah. Right. Last question comes from the Dork Lord. We talked about Cutrone a bit, but he wants to know how Cutrone affects Jota and Jimenez as fantasy assets. You like how I put that little like accent on Jimenez?
Yeah, it was impressive.
Raul Jimenez. So Europa League, we would expect a certain amount of rotation, and Cutrone certainly brought in to help with squad depth so they don't have to run Jota and Jimenez into the ground with Europa and the start of the league. So as I mentioned, I do think Jota and Jimenez still have to be favorites for the starting 11 and Cutrone is just backup. I wouldn't be terribly concerned.
And we'll actually know more because this Thursday they have a qualifying leg of the Europa League that they play. They play Pionic on Thursday, and then actually they play leg two the following Thursday. So, you know, that's what you always love to see, right? Is two Europa League qualifying fixtures wrapped around your first Premier League match of the season. That's what every
chef's
team,
kiss.
Every team wants that. So we'll know. I mean, you know, based on, you know, who starts in that starting 11. By the way, isn't it sad that we have not talked about Matt Doherty the entire offseason? That he's just this wonderful player who had this amazing season, and it's just like he's just done now because he's too expensive.
Yeah, it is sad. He was so much fun last season, but goodbye.
We'll have fun later. Maybe, Matt. Let's see. Get knocked out of the Europa League. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll talk about game week one. Brandon, we're back. I want to take a moment to talk about our friends at Fantasy Football Hub. It is truly and I don't mean this, Brandon. I'm not just throwing this out there. A one-stop shop for all of your Fantasy Premier League and Sky Fantasy needs. Articles, videos, hands-on tools, and podcasts like ours. They also have full coverage of the Sky game, as I just noted, which, Brandon, it's very sad that we can't play that in the United States, isn't it? You know, we got to change these broken gambling laws already.
I feel like it's somewhat of a relief because I don't have know if I have space in my tiny brain for another fantasy game, but yeah. I do like options. I would like to have it as an option.
Me too. But some of the best voices and managers in the game are featured on there, doing articles, videos, podcasts. Lots of people that if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are familiar with, or at least some of these names you are. But you have Will Thomas himself, who is an outstanding manager. He's actually the guy who created Fantasy Football Hub, but does a lot of video content himself. Just really great, very clear thinker about how to succeed at fantasy. Matthew Jones, Adam Hopcroft, Ben Krellen. So just lots of different voices, perspectives, and all presented in a way that I think is very clean and accessible.
Yeah, and speaking of access, Josh, you can become a member of the Fantasy Football Hub. And becoming a member, you gain access to a ton of great members-only features, including the Opta data tool. You get fixture tickers, Rate My Team tools. It's also video and text guides that are perfect for this starting point of the season. They have guides for how to win at FPL, or the ultimate preseason guide. Also, Ben Krellen, notorious for his spreadsheets, he's got an exclusive FPL planning sheet up there. Over 100 member articles annually and weekly team reveals from some of these top-ranked managers. And here's the piece de resistance. Become a member of the Fantasy Football Hub and you gain entry into a members-only league that has a £5,000 cash prize. Wow. So for listeners of Always Cheating, you get 10% off your membership today. Visit fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always. And when you check out with your membership, use the code ALWAYS for that 10% off.
Beautiful. Well said, Brandon. Very articulate. We will see you there.
All right, Josh, let's close out this episode with a proper Game Week 1 preview. We have a couple listener questions just to flesh out our thoughts, but we're starting it off with a bang in Game Week 1. Friday night fixture, Liverpool hosting Norwich. A big topic of conversation when we talk about this clump of fixtures is who are we going to captain? Because this breaks all of the Always Cheating rules. Do we captain a player in the very first fixture of the game? It's the very first fixture of the bloody season, Josh.
I know.
And if something goes wrong with your Mo Salah captaincy, then it stands to ruin Game Week 1 plus the rest of the season. Where are you with this fixture?
I've got Salah as my captain right now. So I'm on the bus team. If I get hit by a bus, Mo Salah will be my captain going into Game Week 1. I have a real itch to captain Raheem Sterling instead. And that itch may get scratched. We will see. But where I am, right, I think it's close. I think it's really close. I think Byron Bruce says, if you already own Salah, is there a case for Sterling to be your Game Week 1 captain? I think, yes, there is. Especially given some of the ambiguity about what's going on in the forward spot right now for Man City. West Ham's defense, I mean, do we have any reason to think it's significantly improved? I mean, is there like something that happened? Like, did they bring in anybody new? I mean, they have Fabianski, who's a good player, and that's it, right? I mean, it's just the same. They're just running it back, you know? So, and that defense is terrible.
It's a bad defense.
Yeah.
It's very bad. Yeah. I was invested in Balbuena for a long run. Mm-hmm. I could not get away from him, and it was miserable.
Yeah.
It was absolutely awful.
Yes.
And yeah, they haven't made any significant signings. And now, I mean, the only case you can make there is FPL wise that Fabianski might get his hands on a lot of shots.
Sure.
But beyond that, no, I like your thinking. I think the fact that City is away is going to be a red flag to a number of managers. But
right.
As we know from past seasons, Manchester City will steamroll any team anywhere, anytime.
Totally.
Unless it's in the Champions League knockout stages, then it's quite a tough ask.
At the same time, is there a risk of overthinking it here? Liverpool at home to a promoted team, Friday night match, kicking off the season. I mean, they're going to be pumped up for this match, right? I mean, this is like a 6-0 win or something, isn't it? Like, I mean, I don't see this as like a 1-0 squeaker, you know. I don't know. I mean, Norwich, you know, God bless them. They won the championship last year. It should be okay this season. But I see this as a pretty one-sided match, even without Sadio Mane back in the team.
Yeah, I think you put it pretty succinctly there, Josh. That was the takeaway, right, from the Community Shield, is Salah looked up for it. And that's something that was one of your takeaways from last season, right, is when you ended up captaining Salah ahead of a hat trick against, was it Burnley? Mm-hmm. It was because you saw him come off the bench the previous game week, right, and he just looked sensational.
Yep.
And I think Salah is the type of player where you can track on form like that. Now, you know, you could basically say the same things about Sterling, but
sure.
I believe the overthinking it note is taken in this case.
Yeah. There's a question from Alex W. It says, if you check to see if you have any FPL interest in every time slot over the opening weekend, then denied that you would let this influence any squad decision you make, but through pure FPL logic, ended up with someone in the Friday game, all three time slots on Saturday and both on Sunday. I thought that was a very funny question. And reading this now, I realize that I'm staring on the barrel of going into the season with not a single player to play on Sunday, which would be kind of a bummer, you know? So I don't know.
It's a reason to get Ayoze Perez into your team.
I was just thinking that. I was like, maybe I have a Perez bet. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see if Perez cracks my team.
Yeah, looking at the Saturday fixtures, we talked about City, West Ham, then it's Bournemouth, Sheffield United. So this is where a lot of people who are going heavy Bournemouth, or at least just going with a Bournemouth attacker, are really hoping to make some hay. Burnley, Southampton, Palace, Everton. Palace have looked in dismal shape in the preseason. Yes,
they really have.
Going back to what we were saying about
Everton. Gone now. Very sad.
The news just gets worse and worse and worse for all the Palace fans. But just what we were saying about Everton is this is a great place for Everton. Sellers Park is not the best venue to go and kick off your season, but you got to like their odds. Watford, Brighton, interesting match. And then it's Spurs hosting Villa, which we've talked about Harry Kane probably enough. And I like your Lucas Moura pick there as well. So beyond City, West Ham, Spurs, Villa, what's the other match on Saturday that jumps out at you as the one to flag for FPL purposes?
Well, I think the Bournemouth Sheffield United match for sure. I mean, I will have a Bournemouth player. Do I have two? Maybe, you know, I think the Everton Palace match would be interesting too. I'm sort of curious it's a funky 10 o'clock run, you know, or I know it's 3 PM in the UK, but for us, I mean, those four, they're all kind of bad fixtures in a way, you know, Bournemouth, Sheffield, Burnley, Southampton, Palace, Everton, Watford, Brighton.
Yeah.
I think it's a group of fixtures that only a fantasy manager could really love. And I love them. I think it's great. I'll certainly have players in these matches. So, Watford, Brighton holds minor interest for me just because I want to see what Brighton look like under their new manager. You know, Burnley, Southampton, I probably only care about if I have Wood. So the Sunday is kind of interesting, right? You've got Leicester, Wolves, Newcastle, Arsenal, Man United, Chelsea. Wouldn't you love to have Aubameyang if there's any way to make it happen? Like, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. It would be fantastic. And it's the story that I'm trying to tell with Harry Kane. Like, they both cost 11 million. If it sounds like I'm guessing that if you were given the choice, you had to have an 11 million striker for game week one, you'd go for Aubameyang over Harry Kane.
That's a good question. I mean, for game week one, no, I guess I would. Well, God, you know, I really am down on Kane right now. So, yeah, I might actually go with Aubameyang over Kane. Especially, yeah. And if I looked at it in a 2 week run of fixtures, so you'd have Aubameyang for game week two versus Burnley. Then, yeah, I do prefer Aubameyang.
Yeah. In a way, it is truly hilarious that the only player that you can get from Arsenal with a clean conscience is their by far most expensive player in Pierre Aubameyang.
Yeah, I mean,
they're
I'm excited about Pepe, but I just don't, you know, I don't think you can have him yet.
Yeah, right. I mean, this is a great way to end the game week with a pure watch, Manchester United-Chelsea. That's mm-hmm. going to be a loaded game at Old Trafford. Sure. Both teams. I mean, Lampard bringing that old school energy to yeah. Old Trafford.
Well, the reception like he'll it. Get as a former Man City player there, too, you know, I imagine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not a lot of love. Not a lot of love. The starting lineup alone for Chelsea is going to be utterly fascinating. Which of their three strikers is going to get the nod? How does Pulisic look? Because I'm very just emotionally invested as an American there. Yep. And their defense, too, because I think once Chelsea's fixtures sort of clear up, I think their defense could be a bandwagon.
Yeah, me too. I mean, Chelsea is kind of in that like Norwich category where I don't really know what to do with them yet. You know, our Man United are arguably in this category too. So I'm just kind of putting them aside for a couple of weeks, you know, and sort of I want to think about them around game week three or something. Final question comes from that Joe guy. Says, do you have any transfers in mind already for the future? So question looking ahead, Brandon.
Man. I'm not sure I do. I've kind of put all of my brain power into game week one, and I don't have any. I can't think that far ahead, and I think this is also a trap that managers can fall into, is the idea that, well, and I've got this team for game weeks one and two, then I make this move in game week three, this player to this player. And these plans rarely sort of you even get to the point where you can enact them because other fires need to be put out along the way.
Yeah. I mean, there are a couple of teams that I'm sort of that I would be looking at, you know, West Ham being one of them, possibly Southampton, too, actually. It's not necessarily specific transfers. I mean, I have players like my puntier players, you know, right now I've got, you know, Bernardo Lucas, Wood, King, I mean, all four of those players are the kind of players who I would happily shift on, you know, if things weren't looking very good, you know. So, I have some spots that I'm like ready to move, but I don't have a specific transfer in mind. All right, Brendan, yeah. that's the podcast. I can't believe it kicks off in 5 days. Insane.
We are going to know so much more in just a short week. So much information is going to be dumped on us by the game week one fixtures. And yes. I can't wait to be a smarter manager because of it.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Well, let's, Brandon, we have some, we promised them. And once again, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating to support the podcast, first and foremost. If you like what we do and you want to say thank you, that's hopefully how the Patreon works. But you know, we also have, you know, Slack, bonus podcasts, all those things to say thank you to our patrons. So Brandon, let's say thank you to our patrons right now.
Okay. So why don't I take the new producer and Volkswagen patrons, okay. Then you can take the giant chunk of Sorloth patrons, and then we'll go from there.
Okay.
Then I'll take the Pookie patrons. All right. So starting off, big thank you to our new producers, Brian Chin, Travis West, and Frederick Kian Grand Ski. And at the Volkswagen level, big thanks to Tyler Ogilvy, Carlos Carranza, Todd Byerly, Dan Nascimento, and Patrick Ellis.
All right. Thank you to producers, Volkswagen patrons, Lord Sorloth patrons. There's a fair amount, so if I read them quickly, don't take that as a sign of disrespect. Chris Bashir, Jonathan Pang, Scott Smith, Aditya B., Ryan, Jordan McGrath, Kevin Griffiths, Michael Van Harlem, William Voorhees, Cameron Shaw, Andres Escalon, Michael Young, Eddie Tierney, Gerald Howey, Bobby Baldoni, Mark Stewart, Klaus Lund, Mike Nidra, Elvind Grotley Nilsson, Joachim Jansen, Nino Gito, Ali Steele, David Mayodrag, Andy, I told you it was a lot, Brandon, Andrew, Andrew King, Michael Thomas, Joshua Wilson, Chris Hall, Ted Rosner, Lucas Gardner, Stuart Clark, Joachim Thorkildsen, Morton Vibe, Alex, Steinar Sundsfjord Arnstad, Tor Forland,
great name,
Dan Thompson, Martin Johansson, Siowal, Kajetel Kutam, Dan Waite, Andrew Straw, and Kenneth Pascard. Whew. Thank you, guys.
Edward Straw. Go with Edward Straw.
Edward Straw. What did I say? I don't know what I said.
Andrew.
Sorry. Edward Straw, of course.
Yes. And then a quick thanks to our Pookie patrons. Whew, oh, man. I can't believe I volunteered for the Pookie patron. Olugubenga Alakaja, Matthew Livchik, Victor Edvardson, the FPL General, Mark McGettigan, Jonathan, Jason Martirano, Melee Matt, Simon Dutka, Johnny Holden, A.A. Ron Johnson, Michael Swanston, Steve Lee, Shane Deere, Jared Simon Pete, and last but not least, big thanks, Anton Titov, our last Pookie patron. Huge round of applause to everyone who has recently joined our Patreon supporters circle. We do really appreciate your support. It makes podcasting fun.
Yeah. Thanks again to everyone who supported the podcast. And again, patreon.com/alwayscheating is where you can go. Brendan, we still actually have our producers to thank, but I think just to break things up a little bit, I'll just note, subscribe to the podcast. You can do it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, Acast, basically anywhere where you download a podcast or are able to do so. You can do so on your phone or your computer, wherever. If you give us a 5-star review on iTunes, that really helps people to find the podcast. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at Hail Cheaters, Instagram at Hail Cheaters, Facebook, facebook.com/alwayscheating. You can email us, hailcheaters@gmail.com. You can also visit our website to find all of this and much more. You can also DM us for any questions or inquiries or whatever at alwayscheating.com. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast this week. And let's sign things off, Brandon. I will say, hail, Lord Sorloth. And I'm just going to give it to you for the producer thank yous. And that's just going to end the podcast. Yeah. Fade to black.
Yes. Hail to Sorloth, Vokes, Poku, and Mbakani, and all of our lovely producers. You know who you are. Brian Chin, Travis West, Frederick Kyan Gransky, Dave Wagner Lodahl, Danny Evans, Brian Jacobson, Ron Frosk, Andy Penn, Jazz Binning, Christian Carter, Bobas Kuhn, James Holland, Ben Grant, Jeff Husby, DeBig Gaffer, Trevor Ingerson, Brian T., Nick Costello, Jim Payne, Adam Benjamin, Martin Savage, Chris Howell, Stephen Toomey, and Mike DePietro. It's the Always Cheating family. We love you all. Thanks for listening. Josh, I'll talk to you next week. Good luck in game week one.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.